Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to a very special edition of Do Go On. I am a special boy, Dave Warnicky, and I'm here with my special friends, Jess Perkins and Matt Stewart. Hello, special team.
Hello, special boy.
Hey, I feel special.
I hope you do.
Why is this special?
Well, we are doing a very special episode. I may as well say it right at the top. We are doing an Olympic special this week, guys.
What?
We are doing an Olympic special because the day this episode comes out, we are just 2 days away from the amazing opening ceremony, the Rio 2016 Summer Olympics. Will it match the 2000 Sydney Olympic opening ceremony that Jess spoke at length about?
In my heart, no. Nothing ever will.
But every time they say, surely this is the best opening ceremony. You know how they always say that?
No, they still say it about Sydney. Anyway.
You think they all suck? What about when they came out with 1,000 horses?
What about when John Farnham and Olivia Newton-John sang Dare to Dream?
Oh,
Dare to Dream.
I mean, that's sure that was a heartbreaking moment.
Dare to Dream.
What about the...
Dare to be
when they came out with six... They came out with 6,000 hills hoists.
Anyway. I'll cry again.
What famous Rio duo will
I've
be?
I've been missing a strawberry kissing.
Also, the birth
Nothing as sweet, the taste still drives me crazy. For international listeners, seriously, do yourself a favour.
Listen, yeah, look
YouTube
up Nikki Webster.
Nikki Webster.
And my nipples.
That's right, you called your nipples strawberry kisses. Gross.
Strawberry kisses. Oh, anyway. So, we're just a couple of days from the biggest event on the sporting calendar. It only happens once every 4 years. And
like Matt getting laid.
Oh, the biggest event.
Every 4 years.
Only 2 days,
that
Matt.
That was a private matter, Jeff.
I know you told me that in confidence, but it's a weird arrangement that you have.
Yes.
And I felt the listeners needed to know.
Sure. Matt, I mean, if you think they'd be interested.
I think they're interested.
Matt is counting down the hours.
Oh, gross. Anyway, let's get into it.
But are you excited about the Olympics?
How do you feel? I like the Olympics.
No, not at all. Not in any way.
Are you seriously? You don't like it at all? You don't watch it? The events?
When I was a kid, I did.
You like sport. I would have thought you'd be right into it.
I like real sport.
What's not real about the Olympics?
It's biggest...
just a lot of silly sports.
I think you're just being purposefully the one who's disagreeing. I think you're just trying
you're
to put in a bit of...
Do you think I'm playing devil's advocate?
I think you're playing bad cop. I think you're playing bad cop.
I'll say some sports and you tell me if you think they're real sport.
Yeah, good. Okay. It's great.
Field hockey.
No.
High jump?
No.
Volleyball?
No.
Shooting?
No.
With a pistol?
Come on.
No, I'm still
okay.
Not.
Basketball?
Basketball?
Basketball's a sport, but I mean...
Great, but...
Uh-huh. Where's the but in that?
Well, I mean, the NBA's the height. That's the pinnacle of basketball. No one gives a shit about Olympics basketball.
Okay, sell it to an Olympic basketballer.
Water polo?
It's real. That's a good sport.
Okay, I've got one.
Gymnastics.
I love seeing those horses under the water.
Oh, God.
like
drowning horses.
Badminton.
Yeah.
Surely you're on board with a bit of badminton.
Shuttlecock?
Shuttlecock.
Yeah, you in for that?
Look, that's a silly sport. That's just like weird tennis.
Ping pong.
Table tennis. Talking about, but it's tennis.
Table tennis.
Tennis, but miniature.
Yeah, table tennis is kind of cool. I like small things.
Synchronized swimming.
Oh man, you're taking the piss now. Like, you are proving my point.
That's dancing in the water. It's water dancing.
But at the same time,
the things that are, I mean, things are. There are a few things at the Olympics that are cool, and I said field hockey. No, field hockey is one of the cool ones. I said no just because I couldn't open with a yes.
well, but, I tried to make you.
But like, you know, the 100-meter sprint's pretty cool.
Yeah. What about swimming?
100... Some of the swimming stuffs can be all right.
200-meter breaststroke.
Yeah, no, yeah, it's all fine. It just feels a little bit. It's all pretty silly. I love it, and I hate it. I love it. Oh, whatever. You're right. I was just trying to be bad cop. I don't have an opinion.
Well, I hope you're
It's
up
just
for...
annoying that they're doing it in the middle of footy season. Jesus.
Have some respect for the real football.
The real sport.
Well, we are doing an Olympic special this week to celebrate the Games. Just because it only happens once every 4 years, we thought we'd jump on the bandwagon. Because I got an email a few weeks ago from one of our listeners, Andrew.
We got an email. Okay, just because you were the one
I read the email.
I've never checked the email. You check the email.
Yes, I'm the email master. That sounds way cooler than it is.
That is
It does sound very cool.
So Andrew emailed us saying, with the Olympics coming up, I wanted to recommend looking at one of my favourite Olympic athletes.
Ah.
And he said, and then I thought, oh, that's really, really cool. And I looked into one of his favourite Olympic athletes who I'm going to talk about. And I thought, oh, that's great. But I feel like we could probably talk about a few Olympic athletes. And then I thought that maybe we could all do one each, go around the table.
Nah.
Do three mini episodes in one where we talk about a famous Olympic athlete.
No, thank you.
No, thanks for the offer, though.
Yeah, it's a nice idea, but
Andrew.
Matt and I prefer it when you talk we sit back quietly.
Yeah, is that cool?
Is that all right?
Thank you. But as cool as badminton.
Pretty cool, then.
Pretty cool, exactly. So, no, you're just joshing me because we have all written a report. And,
we bloody joshed ya.
Yeah.
Got it.
That's the real Olympic sport, am I right?
Joshing.
Bloody joshing with your mates.
God, we'd be the bloody world champs, hey?
World champs.
Relay team over here, joshing with your mates.
Yeah.
And I'm having a bit of a josh and I throw it over to Matt.
Hey, you guys are no good. Nah, just joshing. You're all right. Dave.
I'm better at breaststroke than joshing.
No,
I'm just tricking.
Yeah, he's the best Josh.
Yeah, because my middle name was nearly Josh, but they said James.
David Josh is a silly name.
David Josh. It's a funny bit. If my name was David Josh and we joked about James, he'd be like, that's the worst name ever.
But David, it would be Joshua, surely, not David Josh. That just sounds so silly.
David Josh.
David Josh Hornicky.
Sounds like a...
It's kind of like Jess can't be a middle name, you know?
Rachel Jess Smith.
Yeah, you don't shorten middle names, that's why. It's just weird. It's a weird thing to do.
Matthew...
But Jess is a name.
Matthew Dave Stewart.
That's weird.
That'll David Matt Warnicky.
David Dave Warnicky. No, we thought David wasn't enough. We wanted to honour... I'm not even named after anyone.
But you guys genuinely like the Olympics?
No, I genuinely... find it.
Yeah, I love watching the
Olympics.
It's
probably the time that I watch the most sport in that 4 year period.
Right.
Yeah, I
Any
agree.
Events in particular?
I like the swimming. Swimming. We'll talk about this. Well, I like watching the gymnastics.
Yeah, gymnastics is really, really cool.
Just because, but I tend to watch it like, oh no, because I'm so convinced they're going to hurt themselves.
Oh, I kind of enjoy it when they fuck up a little bit.
No, but see,
it makes it seem a lot harder. Do you not think?
Oh, yeah.
If one of them falls off, you think, oh, actually, it's probably
it's probably
hard,
quite hard. No, but when hard. I played basketball as a teenager, I sprained my ankle many, many times. Like, just my left one, I sprained 9 times. So now when I watch other people, like, play sports and stuff, I get, like, what I call post-traumatic stress, where, like, I'm watching them, I'm I can feel it. Like,
you were only 8 sprained ankles away from making the Olympic squad.
What could have been?
Sprain your ankle once, they'll take you on. Second time?
Shame on you.
Shame on you. You are out of this
Third
squad.
Third time, maybe pick a different sport.
Yeah, come on. Nine times.
That's just the left one. The right one was about 4 or 5 as well. At that point, like, find an indoor activity, you know?
Your foot would just be flipping and flopping. It'd just be dangling.
I can't chica, walk. Chica.
Like that.
Chicka, 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 chic
And the hippin' and the hoppin'.
All right, so who's going to kick it off then with it?
Well, I think I'm going to kick it off by talking about the one that Andrew has suggested.
Cool.
And I'm just going to ask you straight off the bat here. My question is simply, have you heard of the long-distance runner Emil Zatopek?
No.
Yes.
JP, you have?
I have.
Very cool, very cool.
I have heard of.
You have heard of Emil Zatopek, who is a long-distance runner, and I'm going to give a bit of background and then talk about his Olympic feats.
Awesome.
And his records. Feats, F-E-E-T-S, because he's a runner, get it?
Just start the report, mate.
Born in Czechoslovakia in 1922, Emil...
The year was 1922, Czechoslovakia.
See? Emil Zatopek, see, was the sixth, count them, one, two, three, four, five, sixth child in a modest family.
Do that in Czechoslovakian, though.
One, two,
oh.
For a second there, I believed I could speak Czech. I really honestly thought that... It was like, have I told this story in the podcast where I went to mass on... I've never been to really church... You're not over it yet?
Yeah, sorry.
I went to mass on Christmas. I've never done that before in Paris when I happened to be there on Christmas Day, and which was, you know, a cool experience. But after 2 hours of them speaking French and me not understanding a word, we'd stand up every few minutes and they'd sing the songs in French, and that was fine because it's the same tune for hymns, the famous ones, the Christmas carols. And on the way out, the priest is shaking everyone's hand and saying, thanks for coming. Thanks for coming. And he says something to, I don't know, I guess that's what he's saying. He says something to me in French, and I don't want to make him realize that I've sat there for 2 hours not understanding anything he said. So I just, I remember I made this noise. I just went, ba-boom, ba-boom, and just kept walking. Shook his head, ba-boom, and just kept walking. Just kept walking. Ba-boom. Just hoping that, does that sound a little French? That maybe he'd be like, oh, he said something to me. I must have misheard it. Ba-boom. Oh. Oh, that's so silly.
That's you know that people talk about the Curb Your Enthusiasm sort of moment?
Why do you think that was
boom, boom. That sounds like someone pretending to be a drum.
Boom, boom. It does. Boom, boom.
Boom, boom. Did you know any words? Did you thank you or something?
Oui.
Bonjour. He was like, thank you for coming. Hello. Merry Christmas. Just like, Amen, Jesus Christ, our Lord and Savior.
You would have
hello.
Known. You would have known mercy. Mercy.
Merci. Merci beaucoup.
Merci beaucoup.
I honestly panicked. I panicked.
Boom, boom.
Hello. Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, I hope you enjoyed the service. Hello. Oh. Deary me.
My French knowledge would have been very handy as well. Thank you for coming. Merry Christmas. My name is Jess.
Je m'appelle Jess. All right, so...
Hello.
We're with our main man, Emil Zatopek, in Czechoslovakia, the sixth child in a modest family.
Sixth.
That's right.
Sixth. Don't count him. Don't count
him. Oh. At age 16, Emil began working in a shoe factory. Runners use shoes, so this is a good start.
Okay. All right, I see where you're going.
Later on, when he asked how he got into running, he said, one day, the factory sports coach... Sure. I don't know why the shoe factory has a sports coach,
no,
but they do.
My job has a sports coach.
They come in and that's their full-time job.
Yeah,
just to whip you into shape.
Call center sports coach.
Jess, quick, we're hitting the volleyball court in 2 minutes.
All right, I'll be there, sports coach.
Hold the calls. one day, the factory sports coach, who was very strict, pointed at four boys, including me, and ordered us to run in a race. I protested that I was weak and not fit to run, but the coach sent me for a physical examination. Just love this.
So good.
The factory has a big budget for this. Yeah. The doctor said I was perfectly well, So I had to run, and when I got started, I felt I wanted to win, but I only came in second. That was the way it started. So that race had 100 people in it.
What?
So coming in second is actually quite amazing, considering he didn't even want to do it.
And he didn't think he could run. He thought he was too weak and sickly.
He came second, so he wanted to run now. So he joined the local athletic club, where he would develop his own training program. I don't know why you join the club and then develop your own program. Modelled on what he had read about the great Finnish runner Paavo Nurmi. And when I say great, I mean unbelievably great. This guy, have you heard of Paavo Nurmi?
No.
No.
He set 22 official world records, distances between 1,500 metres and 20 kilometres. He won 9 gold, 3 silver medals in his 12 events at the Olympic Games. He once won the 5,000 metre and the 1,500 metres on the same day.
That's...
What?
That sounds really good.
He set Olympic records in both. So that's his hero. Nicknamed the Flying Finn, this guy, Paavo, he always ran with his own stopwatch in his hand so he could check at what time he was setting.
Oh, man, that's great.
I reckon I've heard of the Flying Finn.
The Flying Finn.
Yeah.
Yeah, that rings a bell. Or maybe just sounds cool.
It does sound pretty sick.
So, influenced by his hero, the Flying Finn, Zatopek developed his own style, which experts derided at first, but within a few years, most of the world's top distance runners were using versions of the Zatopek method.
Wow.
Oh, you run the Zatopek? Oh, that is cool. I also run the Zatopek.
I am a Zatopek.
Oh, we are Zatopek runners. Very cool. I don't know what accent that is, so it's not offensive.
Yeah, exactly. That was from outer space. Zatopek found, too, that regular training offered a form of escape from the oppression of Nazi occupation. So,
your mates.
No. But at this time, in the 1940s, when he's training, the Nazis are occupying Czechoslovakia. So it's not a great time for the locals. So he, to escape from it, began to train with levels of obsession and invention that no one had contemplated before.
That's kind
of
cool.
He was like, I'll just work harder.
Smart.
So just 4 years after starting his training in 1944, Emil Zatopek broke the Czechoslovak records for the 2,000, 3,000 and 5,000 metres.
Wow.
At the end of the war, he joined the Czechoslovak army and he continued to train. So he was in the army, but then they let him go and do his training. I think mainly because they were impressed with how dedicated he was.
It's funny that someone had to come up with that. Work harder.
No one's ever thought about this before, but I think it was just absolute crazy obsession. By this time, he developed a rather odd running style, which was very distinctive. Well, Jess is flailing your arms about, but it is actually a lot like that. So it was at odds with what's considered effective style at the time, and probably since, because his head would often roll around.
What?
His face contorted with effort, while his torso swung from side to side.
Do videos of this exist?
You can see videos of it, yeah. He often wheezed and panted audibly while running. You know how like people do make fun of the tennis players now? He was like that, but running for 10,000 metres. He earned the nickname Emil the Terrible or the Czech Locomotive.
That's so great.
He was described at the time by the press...
Everybody's doing a brand new dance now. Emil, baby.
Do the Czech Locomotive.
Great.
At the time, the press described him variously as, he runs like a man who has just been stabbed in the heart.
Oh, boy.
Or, he runs as if there was a scorpion in each of his shoes.
That one makes more sense because you would sort of be like, oh. But if you'd just been stabbed in the heart, I don't think you'd be running.
But no one had contemplated putting a scorpion in the shoe before.
Hello.
So perhaps that was the secret.
Very smart.
Mm-hmm.
When asked about why he did this, he said, I am not talented enough to run and smile at the same time.
Sure, okay.
So he was a wit.
Yes, well, he was asked about his tortured facial expressions. He said, it isn't gymnastics or figure skating, you know.
What?
Oh, cop that.
Cop that.
Hitler? I guess.
Hitler. This is towards the
end. What do you mean? Like you have to look good doing gymnastics?
Yeah, so in gymnastics and figure skating, you get
graded. Do you have to, on your face?
Well, it's all part of the, yeah. Well,
they grade you on your face.
You do get graded on it. You're supposed to make it look easy. The easier you make it look,
that's
the better
why
you
they
score.
Look so funny.
You don't
and
have
they're
to make
pretending,
running.
You know, when,
yeah. and
when
they
their
do that,
gymnast lands.
Yeah, the dismount, and then they're panting, but they're also smiling. It's like, I'm having a great time.
That is so weird. What a weird thing.
This is
the Olympics. That's the Olympics.
We're still talking about
weirdness.
The Olympics.
That's just weird. Olympics is a weird thing.
I love weird. I love weird. So his training was really weird. He would train in any weather, including snow, and would often do so whilst wearing heavy work boots,
sure,
as opposed to special running shoes.
Have they made a movie about this guy?
Not that I've come across.
They should.
So he would wear these running boots because it would make the normal shoes seem easier to run in.
Yeah, sure.
And when he was in the snow, he would put on 3 tracksuits.
Fair enough.
Run around the snow.
Sometimes 1 tracksuit, not enough. That's my rule.
3 tracksuits.
See, I just get too hot.
Yeah, surely the running will warm you up.
Yeah, just put on your shorts.
Come on, Emil. The Czech locomotive. Zatopek was selected for the Czechoslovak national team for the 1946 championships, or European championships, in Oslo and Norway, but only managed to finish 5th in the 5,000 metres. He did, however, break his own Czech record. So he's doing well, best in the country, but in Europe, 5th best.
Which is still pretty good.
So he trained even harder. A couple of years later, his first Olympics were in London, 1948, when he was 26 years old.
Wow.
The government's quite oppressive at the time. They didn't want him to participate in the opening ceremony in case it made him tired.
Aww.
So he temporarily walked his way into the Danish team in order so he could join the parade.
Oh, yeah. That'd be so much fun.
It's a real character.
I mean, it's the worst part of the ceremony to watch because it goes for 17 fucking years.
Do you watch it?
No.
I love their outfits,
You flick across or have you taped it?
What about the outfits? Well, let's say, for example, because it's usually overseas, so it's a weird time here, so we might tape it.
Right.
And then I'd watch it and I'd fast forward that bit and I'd get to Australia and I'd go, yay!
Oh, you'd watch the Australian team.
Australian, and then I'd fast forward.
Okay. Well, I love the outfits, especially, you know, some of this.
Some of the outfits are great. From
the island nations or from Africa, they always wear these really cool stuff.
And ours are always terrible.
It's kind of embarrassing.
They're so bad.
It is funny, like it's on purpose almost. Yeah. But I reckon it's the worst job to get, I reckon. Whatever you do.
Yeah.
The Australian media is just going to give you shit.
It is.
Make them look good. That's not that hard.
I reckon they're fine. Like, who cares anyway?
A few of them have been pretty terrible.
It's just it's a green and gold tracksuit. Oh, yeah, I reckon that's about right.
So, but like...
No, honestly, that's not what I would have done. All right.
I'm
Jess
sorry.
Perkins got an opinion. Everyone shut up for a second. Let's hear about Fashionista over here. What has she got to say? I would have done it gold and green. For shame.
Cop that, Jess.
I don't know where that came from.
Nah, you look good. I like that scarf you're wearing.
Thanks, mate.
Sorry, everybody.
So he's at the Olympics, 1948. He won the 10,000 metre gold medal.
10,000 metres is so far.
So far.
10,000 metres. What's that, 10Ks? I'm running that soon.
Are you?
Yeah.
What do you mean soon? What for?
Fun run.
10K-er.
10K.
Nothing fun about a run.
No, I did a 5K. That was enough.
Well,
I have not trained for it. Great. It's not going to be good.
It's not going to be fun at all.
No.
Oh, I've got some... pay attention to this story, Matt. Zatopek, he finished 2nd in the 5,000 metres, which was run during a rainstorm, which you think he'd be pretty used to because he runs in the snow. So he gets a gold medal and silver medal. The following year, he really stepped it up and broke the 10,000 metre world record twice.
And then he broke the record and then he broke his own record?
Beat his own record,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
And then
You'd like to be like, suck it, past me.
And over the next 4 running seasons, he did it 3 more times. So he just kept improving his own record.
Are you kidding?
He set records in the 5,000 metres, 20,000 metres, how far someone can run in 1 hour, 25,000 metres, 30,000 metres. He won the 5,000, 10,000 at the 1950 European Championship and the 10,000 metre at the next European Championship. So he's winning a lot. But his most successful Olympic Games is the next one, 1952, in Helsinki. Zatopek won gold in the 5,000 metres.
Mm.
So he didn't win that one last time. His victory this time came after a ferocious last lap in under a minute, during which he went from 4th place to 1st in the final turn.
No.
So he just got
there. Last 200 metres.
Yeah. His wife, Dana Zatopkova, who was born on the same day and the same year as her husband, exactly the same age.
Oh, that's kind of cute.
She won a gold medal in the javelin throw.
She was an Olympian too.
Only a few moments after he won the 5-kilometer run. And I don't know if you know this, at the Olympics, obviously they run the 10,000 metres on the track and they do the javelin in the middle, so he's running laps around her while she's getting her own gold medal.
Oh my god, I'm dying.
That's so cool. He also won gold in the 10,000 metres, so bang, he's done the double, right, which is incredible. He's got 2 gold medals, but his greatest feat came as a last-minute decision. He decided to
try synchronised swimming.
Someone, because that happened like it's a school carnival. It's like someone's just dropped out of an event. Can anyone fill in for this? Oh, it'd be so good if the Olympics was like that.
Well, back in 1952 it was, because he decided at the last minute to run in the marathon.
What?
He had never run a marathon in his life. He was like, I've got 2 gold medals.
That's like...
I'll give it a go.
Is that not 42 Ks? Yeah.
So his event, his biggest event at the Olympics is 10,000 metres, right? A marathon is 42,195 metres. So it's like doing 4 of those things again. Much, much longer. He's already tired and he hasn't trained at all.
Oh my God, I know what he's going to do.
But his strategy for the marathon was simple. He just raced alongside Jim Peters, who's a British guy.
Jimmy Peters.
Who was the world record holder at the time. So he's like, I'll just keep up with this guy. He knows what he's
doing.
Oh,
that's smart. See, that's smart. People don't think like that.
No.
If you want to be the best at something, just run next to the person who's already the best at it.
And then at the end, just go a little bit quicker.
Yeah, like say...
Kick him in the
dick. See you later, PD. Woo!
If you want to start a really popular social media website, just run next to old mate Zuckerberg. I'm not sure.
And then at the last possible
last minute,
second,
kick him in the dick.
Kick him in the dick.
Yeah. Run across the finish line.
Yeah. Yeah.
Collect your $1 billion check.
Just steal. Probably just steal.
Why aren't more people successful with this basic advice, you know?
Well, Matt, you could do
never
this
given it before, probably. Well, yeah.
Are you planning now to run alongside the winner of this 10-kilometer race you're doing, Matt?
Yeah, I'm just going to run alongside the winner.
Well, so I'll tell you, the rest of the strategy is, after a punishment, so he's running alongside the world record holder, never run a marathon before ever, after a punishing first 15 kilometers, so already further than he's ever run properly, in which Peters knew he had overtaxed himself, Emil asked the Englishman what he thought of the race thus far. Hey, how do you think we're doing? The astonished Peters told the Czech that the pace was, quote, too slow in an attempt to psych out and slip up Zadarbek. So he's like, I've been running faster than I've ever run before. I'll tell him I'm running slow, and
so
that'll
psych
already, him out.
He's pushed himself. Like,
he's pushed
already,
himself too hard.
He's like, I've gone too hard.
I've gone too hard. I'm going to I'll psych him out. Oh, it's just, yeah, we're running too slow, to be honest. I reckon I'm under my best time. At which point, Zadarbek responded by simply accelerating. And just
You're kidding.
As Zadarbek entered the stadium in first place, 70,000 people chanted his name. With such spine-tingling unanimity.
That's a hard word.
Fuck. Chanted his name in such a spine-tingling way that one British journalist described it as, quote, the greatest happening in athletics history. At that moment, recalled Juan Antonio Samaranch, a future president of the IOC, International Olympic Committee. He said, at that moment, I understood what the Olympic spirit means.
Oh.
Peters...
Someone winning a race.
Matt. Well,
Peters, the world record holder. No, it's fucking inspiring.
Yeah, yeah. The guy, he ran really fast. I'm inspired.
Jim Peters did not even finish the race. Zadarbek won the race and set an Olympic record.
Fuck off.
He's never run a marathon before.
He's incredible. I love that. He's like, so, how we doing, Petey boy?
Yeah, how are you? Oh, no, we're going too slow. Oh, are we? Oh, shit. Okay, see ya. I'm going to run.
Are you going to run?
Hey, keep up.
Jim, you're going to run faster too?
Another 25 to go, Jimmy.
Jim?
Jim's dead, you guys. Died of a heart attack.
Not long after that.
Well, Jim did nearly die a couple of years later. In 1954, at the Vancouver Commonwealth Games, he reached the stadium in first place, 17 minutes ahead of the next runner, 10 minutes ahead of the record, but he collapsed repeatedly and failed to finish.
In
11 minutes, he staggered only 200 metres.
Oh, my God.
He collapsed, he was stretched it off, and never raced again. Aww. He said later on, I was lucky not to have died that day.
That is incredible. He was
10 minutes under the world record.
Oh, my God.
He's that doing the last lap, and he can't do it. Imagine. So Jimmy Peters pushed himself a lot. Zadarbek, so now he's won 3 gold medals. He attempted to defend his marathon gold medal at the next Olympics, however, it was the Melbourne Olympics, 1956. However, he suffered a groin injury while training, so bad he was hospitalized.
Somebody kicked him in the dick.
Well, yes.
Yeah, well, he was hospitalized for 6 weeks. It's a big kick.
Made two mistakes there. First, he was kicked in the dick. Mm-hmm. And then secondly, he trained for the marathon.
Yeah, don't train.
Surely you'd keep up a good thing. Don't train, just win it.
Sadly, he resumed training after leaving the hospital, but the day after leaving, but never quite regained his form. He only finished 6th in the marathon, and he retired from competition in 1957, age 35.
Wow.
In 1966, he gave one of his gold medals to the legendary Australian runner Ron Clark. Mm-hmm. Ron Clark, who was, despite setting like over, I think, two dozen world records himself, he never won an Olympic gold medal. So Zatopek gave it to him because he was a hero for him. Very sadly for Zatopek, in the 1960s, he stood up to the Communist Party in charge in an event known as the Prague Spring. He was stripped of his rank and expelled from the army and the party which he'd been serving in. He was very dedicated to the Communist Party, but he stood up to them. They removed all important positions from him, and he was forced to work in a string of inferior and dangerous positions, like mining and digging holes and like pretty awful stuff. And for a time, all of his records and existence were stripped completely from the books.
Oh,
so he
shit.
Acted like he never existed. His image was rehabilitated by the Czech president Vaclav Havel in the early 1990s. So he regained
His fame. Quite a while later.
A long time later, nearly 30 years, no, 25 years later. And he died in the year 2000, age 78.
Wow.
In 2013, the editors at Runner's World magazine, they like running, selected him as the greatest.
Worlds.
Well, they selected him as the greatest runner of all time.
Wow.
He remains the only person ever to win the 5,000, 10,000, and marathon at the same Olympics.
That's incredible.
He ran all three events in just 8 days. So he ran a long way. In 2012, he was named among the first 12 athletes to be inducted into the IAAF, International Association of Athletics Federations, Hall of Fame. Other people inducted include Carl Lewis, Australian Betty Cuthbert, Jesse Owens, and Zatopek's hero, the Flying Finn. Paavo Nurmi.
Awesome.
So there you go. What a cool dude.
What a cool dude.
What a cool dude.
That is really fascinating.
So I hope I did justice to Andrew, one of his favourite athletes. So that's one athlete down. We've got two to go here, people.
Well, what's really interesting is that we probably should have discussed this in more detail because mine...
We don't know who we're going to talk about, by the way, I should say. Have you also picked him? When I asked you, have you heard of Emil Zatopek, is that because you've written a 30-minute report on him?
I haven't done a report on him. I have done a report on an Australian at a similar time.
Ronald Clark?
No, who was inspired by your mate. So, I'll just get stuck into it.
So it's like the 4x100. I'm passing the baton.
You are passing the baton, and I gratefully accept the baton. It's weird not starting with a question because I don't really
and ask a question.
Have you heard of John Landy?
Yes.
Dave.
Yes, but I don't know why, to be honest.
Okay, well that's...
Was it a big thing with Ron Clark?
Yes.
I've heard a little bit about this.
John Landy is an Australian, so he was born in Melbourne in 1930 and
cool.
He went to Malvern Memorial Grammar School, which is now part of Caulfield Grammar, and Geelong Grammar School. And he graduated from Melbourne University in 1954, receiving a Bachelor of Agricultural Science.
Oh, he knows a thing or two about plants, does he? He
knows a thing or two. Now, he became a serious runner during his uni years, and he joined the Geelong Guild Athletic Club in 1949. And he was a member of the Australian Olympic team at both the 1952 Summer Olympics in Helsinki and the 1956 Summer Olympics here in Melbourne.
Oh, so he would have seen Zatopek.
Similar times, yeah, exactly. He actually took the Olympic oath at the 1956 Olympics in Melbourne. You know how there's always like one person who takes the oath
on behalf of all athletes.
All of athletes. So it was John Landy at 56 in Melbourne, here in Melbs.
That's a real honour.
Isn't it? And it was John Landy, which is pretty cool. Now the point, I've always really liked the story of John Landy, and it's not even necessarily about, like he was obviously a very talented runner and that will become apparent, but his story is more of, like incredible sportsmanship and just human spirit, and that's why I really like this story.
Is that when you truly understood the Olympic spirit?
Yeah, it is, and that's why I enjoy the Olympics. And maybe Matt, after this, maybe you too.
Yeah, I'll melt your cold, cold heart.
Maybe you can enjoy the Olympics after this.
And you can salute Queen Elizabeth II, as we all should.
So on the 21st of June in 1954, at an international meet in Finland, John Landy became the second man, only after a guy called Roger Bannister, to achieve a sub-4-minute mile.
The four-minute mile.
Recording a world record time of 3 minutes 57.9 seconds, which was rounded up to 3 minutes 58 seconds because of the rounding rules that were in effect at the time. So Three minutes 58, and he ran a mile.
Why are they bloody rounding it up?
I know.
If they know the answer.
Yeah, hey, we all know that you ran 3 minutes 57.567.
But...
Just
to be safe.
It's just easier to put it on the board. We've only got so much chalk.
Yeah.
Chalk savings are important.
My wrist hurts. Oh. I'll just write an 8. 8's are hard in chalk. Eight. Can I just say, I'll just round up to 4 minutes.
Can we just say, let's just say you did it in 0.
I'll just draw a tick. Did it.
Take your certificate and move on.
Fuck off.
How about everyone gets an Olympic medal? That's much easier.
Yeah, I'm into this.
Yeah, that would be okay, wouldn't it?
If we all got one, then it wouldn't matter.
Yeah, no, okay, there it is. There's the point. Yeah, it wouldn't matter. So, yeah, he broke the record, and that record was held for more than 3 years. Internationally, he's probably best known for his part in a mile race in the 1954 Commonwealth Games in Vancouver, which you were mentioning before as well, because your
mate. That's right, they're all the same era.
He ran his second sub-4-minute mile in the race, but lost to Roger Bannister, who had his best time ever. And this meeting of the world's two fastest milers was called... It had a few different names. They called it...
Duh.
I hope it rhymes.
Me too. The Rumble in the Mile.
The We've Trundle
got,
in the...
They're pretty dramatic names. We've got the Miracle Mile.
Oh, that's good.
Or the Race of the Century.
I like that. But there's a lot of the centuries, isn't
there? And the Dream Race. Dream Race kind of sounds a bit racist, doesn't it?
The Dream... yeah, the Master Race.
Yeah, that sounds wrong. Of those, I think I like Miracle Mile. Anyway, I think you liked Race of the Century the most, Matt.
Yeah, I mean, they're all a little bit kind of, they just sound a bit like they were made by a machine, you know? There's no personality to any of them. They also sound a bit cold.
What would you call it? So you got two of the best mile runners.
I really like Rumble in the Jungle type of thing.
Uh-huh.
So what about, and where were they?
Vancouver.
Is that like a jungle or?
No.
What is it? That's like Canada. Canada.
It's like a Canada, yeah.
Okay, let's say. And what's another way of saying running race?
Sprint.
Sprinty. Well, that's not really sprint,
okay.
Is it?
What
about this?
Uh-huh.
The long distance race in Canada.
I like it.
Yeah.
What about Trial of the Mile?
Oh yeah, see, there's like a rhyme there.
That's good.
Trial of the Mile.
That's pretty good.
Hashtag
Trial of the Mile.
Get a telephone and dial.
Dial a mile.
While everyone else is running somewhere around a mile.
What about the mile that takes less than a while?
Oh, that's better.
Have you two thought about careers in advertising?
I think so. I think I've got a gift.
I kind of already do work in it, yeah.
Do you?
Yeah, I write some ads, so...
Wow. I'd hate to be the sad loser acting in those ads. It's me. Everybody, there's a lot of build up around this race, the mile, the Miracle Mile, the Race of the Century, the Dream Race. It was heard over the radio by 100 million people.
And They're still running.
Okay, well, that's why you can't be a good commentator, okay?
Now, it'd be more like this. And here they go, they're running. And here they're keeping on going. Here they go, they're running and they're running. And one of them is ahead of the other. I can't quite see.
We don't have the technology. We're a long way away.
But they're running and they're running. They're a bit out of sight now, but we'd like to assume that they are still running. They are running a race of their lives. Here they go, running and running. Running with their legs, and all of their legs are running. Here they are, and they're running now. Run. And running up the run. And here we run.
You haven't even done a minute. It's a 4-minute race.
And oh, my goodness. They run. Yes. Yes, they do. They run and they run. And off they run, and they're still running, and etc.
What's that? They stopped running. Just kidding. They're still running. 4 minutes of that.
That's exhausting. But 100 million people listened, so...
Wow, anyway,
it must be pretty good.
And you're listening. And you're listening as they're running.
It was seen on TV as well, because it was seen on television.
I almost don't need to tell you. You can see it for yourself. There they are, running away from the person behind and towards the person in front. Unless you're the leader, then just running into the bloody distance there, into the space that
the
has been...
Yeah. Me to stop here. I was just trying to.
No, if you wanted, well, if you just, wanted to butt in,
no, that was just someone turning the radio off. I'll just tune in about 3 minutes, 50 seconds.
Yeah. You could just let me know who wins this. So.
Anyway, the final, the famous moment, I should say, of this race was on the final turn of the last lap. Landy looked over his left shoulder just to see what's going on behind him because he's sort of in the lead.
Oh, he's winning.
He looks over his left shoulder right as Roger Bannister passed him on the right. So he sort of did it like
so he looked to his left.
Oh, no, I'm all good. Oh, that oh, is good.
Shit. I wish they had slow-mo replays of him going, I'm cool. I'm not cool at all.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, they just did not have that sort of technology for slow-mos.
Well, I will be reenacting.
Internal monologues. But there's actually a bronze sculpture of the two men at this exact moment as Landy sort of looks over his left shoulder and Bannister passes him on the right. It was created by a Vancouver sculptor called Jack Harmon in 1967. And it stood for many years at the entrance to the Empire Stadium in Vancouver, which is now no longer there, so the statue's been moved. But the statue still exists.
Plus, it outlived the stadium.
Yeah. But I think that's kind of nice. It was like a really famous moment in both of their careers.
Of Roger Bannister. So Roger Bannister, did he win?
Yes.
Oh.
That's okay. That's all right. It's not over.
Wait, are you telling the story of a loser?
Oh, fuck both of you.
David just told this story about this guy just won everything. And you've brought a story of a loser?
Can I go on, please?
I mean, sure, if you want to, but it feels like a bit of a waste of time.
Okay, so Dave's mate won every single race, did he? Because I remember him being fifth
in Oslo.
Okay, so coming bloody...
And then he came back. He trained.
Yeah, so give Landy a chance to come back.
Oh, okay, yeah. Thank you.
So that's how John Landy's...
Can I just say, Jess, not a lot of people tell it to me straight. And what you did there showed a lot of moxie. You've got the job.
Yay!
You can be in one of my crappy commercials.
I can't wait. So that was that race at the Commonwealth Games in Vancouver is kind of how he's known internationally. But in Australia, he's remembered for his performance in the 1500 metre final at the 56 Australian National Champions just prior to the Melbourne Olympic Games.
So just before?
Just before the Olympic Games. So to tell this story, I found a piece written by Harry Gordon. It was written in 2004. And he knows or has known John Landy for a very long time. So... I really like this whole article. Is really, really nice. So I'm just going to read part of it now, like most of it. Anyway, and it says a lot about John Landy's character as well, which is sort of the whole point of why he's so famous in Australia. So it starts with this. It says, to John Landy, it was an unfortunate accident, a diversion, really, and certainly not an important event in his running career. He was never allowed to forget it, though, and reckons that it came to haunt the rest of his life. A lot of people seem to think it was the most significant thing I ever did in running, he has said. It wasn't, but the press grabbed it and made it look that way. The incident in question occurred at Olympic Park, Melbourne, on March 11, 1956, during the Australian Mile Championship. Diversion or not, it was named at the end of 1999 by the Sport Australia Hall of Fame as the nation's finest sporting moment of the 20th century.
Wow.
Yeah. And it has been commemorated by a larger-than-life sculpture called Sportsmanship, erected directly across the road from Olympic Park.
God, this guy's sculpted everywhere.
It's kind of cool. So what actually happened? It all began when Ron Clark, who you mentioned...
Ronnie.
World record holder, never got the gold medal, but my man Zatopek gave him a gold.
The youngster who would one day hold every world record from from 2 miles to 20 kilometres.
Wow.
Came a cropper. God, I love Australians. Came a cropper. So he's
Matt, do you
he's
want to
translate?
No, I was going to say Matt needs to translate that.
He fell over.
And he
you
fucked
know what?
It.
The next sentence explains it. So as Clark crashed down after clipping another competitor's heels, Landy, who was very close behind, leaped desperately to clear his body. So he's jumped over him. Just because, like, your
instinct
is to jump.
Right, of course, yeah, you go, whoa, I've got something's in my way.
So he jumps, but he doesn't quite manage to clear him, and his spikes land on the inside of Clark's arm.
Oh, that sounds painful.
Right. So Landy pulled up, and while with other runners streaming past him, Landy took the time to trot back to Clark, who was still on the ground, and check how badly hurt he was. And yes, he also apologised.
Sorry about that.
Went back and went, are you okay?
Oh, no.
Assured? Yes, Matt?
Oh, no, it's just fun. I never knew that he... spiked him. I just thought
I
he
didn't
went,
know that either. Yeah,
for some reason I just thought he went, oh, this guy's fallen over. I'm going to go help him out. Didn't realize it was because he'd hurt him.
Is that worse than, like, it's less cool now?
Yeah, I don't know. I remember as a kid, because I've run at that stadium, and I reckon our teachers told us about that when I was at school. And I was just like, as a kid, I was like, what are you doing? Just go and win the race. Worry about him later.
But now
he'll
thinking,
still be there.
Now you're thinking,
oh, that's probably fair enough.
Fair enough.
Yeah, it's probably fair enough.
So he's gone back and checked and assured that the injury wasn't too serious. Landy looked up, then did something that astonished most of the 22,000 spectators.
Oh, wow, there's a lot of people watching. I forgot that bit. Just to me in my head, I was just thinking, they're just running.
22,000 people watching. With Clark now on his feet and urging him on, he began to chase a field of runners that had gone a long way past him. He had about a lap and a half to go. At the bell's lap...
Which is the final lap when the bell goes off.
He was fairly hurtling. He's running. And amazingly, he won the race. His act of chivalry had cost him perhaps up to 7 seconds, and there is no doubt he sacrificed the chance of a world record. His time was 4 minutes, 4.2 seconds.
I don't think I knew he won the race either.
He won.
I don't remember.
He stopped to help his friend.
So he's not a loser, Matt. He's a goddamn winner.
And that was a big that was an Olympic race or is
no,
that
no, that was the
Olympic lead up
the
one
championships
of the,
before the Olympics.
World championships? Australian championships. It doesn't really matter. Sorry about that, everyone.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive and June. Olive and June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive and June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive and June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
And so then he goes, Harry Gordon goes on to say, John Landy did not just win a championship that day. He took a foot race into folklore. I was a privileged witness. And I have to say that after more than half a century of watching and writing about sport all over the world, I've never seen a finer example of undiluted sportsmanship.
What a dude.
How cool is that? Next day, I reacted the only way I knew how. In my
got on Twitter.
Basically, he got on his newspaper. In my newspaper, the Sun News Pictorial, I wrote an open letter to John Landy about his actions. The entire letter, fashioned in bronze, now sits at the base of the sculpture created by Mitch Mitchell. Also, cruel parenting there, Mitch Mitchell.
Mitch, what? So his full name's probably Mitchell Mitchell.
That's awful.
That is an absolute shocker.
And this is what I like, that he says, a couple of paragraphs are worth quoting here. He's quoting himself, which is adorable. But this is what he wrote in the newspaper at the time, and this is what it says underneath the sculpture of him now. So it says, yours was a classic sporting gesture. It was a senseless piece of chivalry, but it will be remembered as one of the finest actions in the history of sport. In a nutshell, you sacrificed your chance of a world record to go to the aid of a fallen rival. And in pulling up, trotting back to Ron Clark, muttering sorry, and deciding to chase the field, you achieved much more than any world record.
But he also said, he said since that he regrets it. He wishes they didn't focus on it so much, sort of. Is that right?
He doesn't regret it. He doesn't regret it. Don't make such a fuss out of it.
Yeah, right.
He's humble.
But oh, I thought you were sort of saying, like, I achieved more stuff than that. That's what it sounded like when you said that before. It's like,
you
don't, why are you focusing
more
on that?
Than,
I did a lot of better stuff.
No, he's just saying, like, stop making a fuss. I just did what anybody would do.
I founded Apple Computers.
But it's not what everybody would do.
Honestly, I just did what anyone else would do when they'd stabbed another racer with their boots.
Can you not just take, like... He's like one of my sporting heroes, and you're just shitting all over him because he accidentally hit
stepped
him.
On a man.
Like, he still went back and helped him.
Yeah, I know. It was, no, you're right.
And a hero always says, I was just doing what anyone would do.
Well, that's exactly it. And that's what...
But
what...
one time I would love to see on the news report when they say, like, yeah, you saved the kid from that burning house. What? Everyone's calling you a hero. What do you have to say to that? Yeah, I am a fucking hero. I'd love to hear that one day.
That'd be so good.
That'd be so good. Yeah.
Yeah, what do you reckon?
What do you reckon? I just risked my life. I just saved the kid.
So great.
Fuck, I'm a hero.
Yeah, no, sorry about that, Jess.
Yeah, no, it's
sorry
fine.
About that, Peter Landy. John Landy.
John Landy. We don't get his name right. Okay, and that's sort of the point. So, like, Harry goes on to say, and again, a lot of people are wondering why you pulled up. The truth is, of course, that you didn't think about it. It was an instinctive action of a man whose mate is in trouble. In the record books, it will look a very ordinary run for these days. Wait. But then he says, but for my money, the fantastic gesture and the valiant recovery make it overshadow your magnificent miles in Finland and Vancouver. It was your greatest triumph, and it is fitting that it took place in your hometown. So it's like you already had a win, which is great, but you also did it in a really sportsmanly way.
Yeah.
Words are fun.
That is, the fact that he won the race as well is pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. But, yeah, it's exactly...
And pretty embarrassing for everyone that he beat.
Yeah.
Exactly as he said, like, it was just instinct.
He stopped, he got out his little first aid kit.
Yeah.
So applied 7 a stitches. Yeah.
Learned to sew.
Yeah.
Drove him down to the hospital.
YouTubed how to stitches.
Drove to the hospital, waited 6 hours in emergency. To find a park.
God, you know, get a park.
Came back, changed back into his outfit, did some stretches, like, look, did 6 warm-up laps.
Might as well finish the race.
Took off from where he was and still beat them by a good 17 seconds.
I really like this part of what Harry is saying because he takes it to a new level, which I really enjoy. So he says, so long afterwards, I wouldn't change a word. It's my belief that some of the proudest history of our nation had a lot to do with people reacting generously, selflessly, courageously, and yes, instinctively, where their mates have been in trouble. Which is nice, but then he says, in so many places, in bushfires, in floods, in battlefields, in the surf, and on the track.
Man,
you know, Anzacs,
I love that kind of
John
patriotism.
Landy. Yeah.
It's like, you know, what's something different about our country, Australia, is we help our mates, you know? In them other countries where they just, if they see a mate in trouble,
they'll leave him.
They'll kick him.
They'll kick him. What's that? You need my help. And I'm gone.
Yeah, that's what I do because I'm not Australian.
Yeah.
Who invented helping out people.
Mateship.
It's so funny.
It's pretty funny.
We're pretty dumb.
Well, one
Good
of the,
on us.
One of the people that influenced his progress.
Who's this? Sorry.
John Landy. John Landy. Was Emil Zatopek.
The man himself.
The man himself.
He influenced him.
He was an influence.
Oh, Matt, I hope your one is influenced by your athlete better be influenced by John Landy somehow.
I don't think there's any connection.
Nah, there's got to be.
Between,
we'll find a way.
We'll make it up.
That is your job.
I like this. It says John Landy came under the spell of Zatopek at the 1952 Helsinki Olympics.
He was a witch doctor.
Yeah,
where the Czech won the 5,000 metres and 10,000 metres.
Oh, that's right.
And the marathon.
And the marathon.
Before.
The only man to
so
ever
Landy
do that.
Was like, this guy is a fucking king. So Landy accepted invitations to run with Zatopek and took careful note of his methods, including his punishing repetition training. And he changed his style.
And doing this.
He changed his running style, even his running shoes, and he would run each
Put
night.
On the work boots.
He would run each night around Central Park in Melbourne, which now is named after John Landy. So the park that he used to train around is now named after him, which is
That's
pretty cool.
Sick. Where's that?
I think it's in like East Malvern.
Huh.
John Landy Park. Oh man, imagine having a park named after you.
Well, he's got sculptures all over it as well. Pretty
all
sick.
Over the world, two
all
of them.
Over the world. Now, John Landy didn't win a whole lot of medals. He only won a bronze at the 1956 Melbourne Olympics for the 1500 meters. But he was obviously, you know, his sportsmanship and his humble nature and everything made him a bit of a legend. And what he went on to do, do you guys know what he went on to do after his...
Did he go into politics?
Kind of, yeah.
Governor?
Governor of
Victoria.
So he was sworn in on the 1st of January in 2001, sworn in as the 26th governor of Victoria.
Was that Jeff Cannett days? Was that...
Steve
no one
Brax.
Cares about Braxy.
Brax was the premier. So he was the governor of Victoria. He's written a few books about natural history because he had that science.
Oh, I suppose he's an agricultural.
Yeah.
He's good at a lot of stuff.
Yeah, and just like, just the loveliest
Running,
person.
Books.
Just a cool guy.
Politics.
Over the years, he's been awarded with numerous honorary degrees, the first being a Doctor of Law from the University of Victoria. Then a Doctor of Rural Science from the University of New England, followed by a Doctor of Laws from Melbourne Uni, and a Doctor of Laws from Deakin. I went to Deakin. Maybe put that one to the back of the pile.
Don't worry about it. Don't frame that one.
Yeah.
So he's got a quadruple doctor.
Yeah. He was inducted into the Sports Australia Hall of Fame in 1985. In 1955, he was made a member of the Order of the British Empire for services to sport. He was awarded the Australian Sport Medal in 2000, and in 2001, he was awarded the Centenary Medal, made a Companion of the Order of Australia, and a Knight of Grace of Most Vulnerable Order of the Hospital of St. John of Jerusalem. That's a long title.
What a title.
And in 2006, he was appointed a Commander of the Royal Victorian Order during the Queen's visit to Australia. So he's had all these amazing titles and awards and everything like that. This is kind of cool. On the 15th of March in 2006, in the final month of his term as governor, John Landy was the final runner in the Queen's baton relay during the 2006 Commonwealth Games opening ceremony at the MCG Stadium in Melbourne, presenting the baton to the Queen by placing it in its specially constructed holder. So he was like the last person to do that.
And he handed it to the Queen.
Yeah. Well, I don't think they'd let him just hand it to the Queen. He just put it in a thing in front of her and was like, "Your Majesty.
Here you are.
Here you are." And the last little bit that I wanted to say was it's another thing that Harry Gordon said in his write-up about John Landy. He said, "When the Victorian government made the sensible decision to appoint Landy governor of the state, the Premier, Steve Brax, paid tribute to his humility. It is a trait that has often asserted itself, but maybe never more so than in his attitude to the memorable day at Olympic Park in March 1956. He still believes that what he did in that race didn't warrant a fuss. That's what makes him special." He's like, "No, I don't know, no big deal, whatever."
Still wish that he'd gone, "I'm a fucking hero."
Yeah, you're right. Ron should be bloody grateful. You're welcome.
You're welcome. You're welcome. What a guy. So that's
John Landy.
All right, John Landy, inspired by Emil.
Have you got another runner? Who did John Landy inspire?
Come on, Matt.
If you wanted to do that, you should have told me. Did you guys talk about this?
And
you
thought, we wanted to embarrass
funny.
You.
You're going
to,
buddy, make a
like
fool
a
of old Matt Stewart, you low dogs.
It doesn't take much to make a fool of old Matt Stewart.
Well, all right. Well, I mean, yeah, fair enough. Thank you. When you said Olympics, it was like, you know, the Olympics is obviously a big, big family. A lot of different things happen there. I chose another Australian athlete, but from the Winter Olympics, a guy called Stephen Bradbury.
From
Modern Times.
Mm.
And so Stephen Bradbury, he's a fella born in Sydney in 1973. He was an Olympic speed skater.
Right, so it was the ones that go round and round and round real quick.
Round and round real quick, yep, round the circle.
Yeah, they
do
skate
that thing
at high speed.
But like spinning a circle.
You know, and they're wearing those things on their fingers so they can sort of touch the thing to go around the corner.
Oh, yeah, what is that? What's on their fingers?
I don't know, it must be just like mittens or something like that. Like special mittens, though, ones that wouldn't get just soak up all water like ones that your mum might have knitted. Anyhow, his dad was also a skater. His dad actually was the...
His dad was a skater boy.
Oh my God,
I was singing that
in my head.
Yeah, his dad was a skater boy.
He wasn't good enough for her.
Well, I disagree with that final part. We're
talking about Stephen's mum, by the way.
He was actually the Australian national speed skating champion in 1963 and 64.
Runs in the fam.
Wow.
The fam got the runs.
Oh, right.
Dodgy Mexican.
He wasn't good enough for them.
He first got Stephen onto some skates at the age of 3, so he got him started very young.
Oh, I was pushing him.
You got to start him young.
But
I'm getting my kid. I'm getting them a soccer ball because they're the ones that make the most money. Anyway, Matt.
I just want my children to be loved and feel happy. But yeah, okay, cool.
I want to retire at 40.
Listeners might know I do a trivia night that Dave writes the questions for once a week. And there was a question you wrote not that long ago. Which sport has the highest paid players in terms of the top 100 in Forbes magazine or something?
Oh, it's
and
the
it
highest percentage.
Soccer. Yeah, it was.
But the highest paid athlete in the world.
It was baseball.
Well, the highest paid athlete in the world is Cristiano Ronaldo.
Right. But yeah, I was really fascinated by the fact that baseball had the most.
Top
100.
The record is of the 100 list of Forbes 100 highest paid athletes for the last 12 months. The the biggest percentage is made up by baseball players.
Oh, wow.
There you go. But, you know, one and two are both soccer players.
Right. Yeah, that's right. Anyhow. So I'm going baseball. I'm not gonna name a baseball player.
I'm not going to have 100 kids. I'm going to have one kid. They're going to be at the top of that list and they're going to play soccer.
I'm going to have 100 kids.
Anyway, young Steve...
Your 100 kids can fight my one kid.
I'm going to get 2 busloads. I'm just going to pick up kids on the street.
Come on in. Get in. Jess's fun bus.
I call my
boobs.
That
sounds weird. You call your boobs the fun bus.
Fun bust.
Oh.
What were you saying, Jess?
I was saying fun bus.
My boobs are my fun bus.
It's late and I've had Skittles.
So he put him on skates at the age of 3, but it kind of ended in tears. Stephen was not keen.
Oh, no.
Apparently, I was listening to an interview with him, and he was saying that whenever someone goes around to his mum's house, the first photo she pulls out of him as a 3-year-old, all soaked wet and bawling his eyes out because he just hated it.
He's doing the photo, and they're like, yeah, love, it's $22 for that large pizza and a Coke. Stop showing me your family photos, please.
And that's very nice.
Oh,
thank you very much.
It's a pizza delivery, man.
That was a pizza delivery. She's still... Anyway, before I pay you, just check out this photo of young Stephen Bradbury.
A couple of years later, his dad tried again. So he was 5 years old, and by that stage, he started getting into it. And then at the age of 8, he started going speed skating. He started doing it competitively. And that was when he said that he started really getting the bug for loving going fast. That's what he's into. At the age of 15, he made it onto the national speed skating team.
Wow.
And wow.
So quite young. But at this stage, the skaters on the team were selected by a committee on their discretion.
Was dad in the committee? Wasn't,
not necessarily going off data, like stats, results, and his dad was on the committee.
What are you, not going off results or data, what is it going off?
It's that, going off, you know, that gut, kid, gut feel.
See that kid there? I reckon he'd go real good on skates.
But that,
and he's my son. What are you doing here, Stephen? Why are you wandering past the office? Get him in.
Get him in.
Number one.
Suit up, Stephen. You're in.
Stats or so the world's fastest skater's going, what the fuck?
No, I mean, obviously that came into consideration, but other things were factored in as well. And at this, apparently so Stephen like, has said that
factored in there,
there were definitely better skaters around at the time, but the committee were looking to the future.
They were thinking
and
of
trying to get fresh blood in, so they were. That's why they went with the young 15-year-old.
They wanted someone who was a Scorpio, and everyone else wasn't, so...
Yeah, Scorpio and also, yeah, the son of...
son of a Scorpio.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't want to go into his famous race yet. I'll talk about that later. But by the time of his 2002 Olympics, which is what he's most famous for in Australia anyway, I imagine our overseas listeners probably have never heard of this guy. But by the time he got there in 2002, he was competing in his 4th Olympics.
Wow. See, I had no idea.
Yeah, so he had a long career. He'd already been the world champion in the 5,000 meter relay in 1991, 11 years earlier.
Wow. How old was he then? Really young.
Yeah, so he would have been, he was 18, I guess.
And then you get a gold medal at the world championships.
Yeah, gold medal, world champion in a relay team. In that same relay event, a couple of years later, they won bronze in 93 in Beijing. And then following on from that, a year after that, won silver. So he's won multiple world championship medals before that famous Olympics. In the 1994 Olympics, Bradbury actually went into his 1,000-meter event as the favourite.
Yep.
Which is like, I didn't realise.
So he was
good. In the 1994 Olympics, he won through to the semi-final. He won his heat, got through his quarter-final. So his favourite for the whole event in the semi-final, but he was knocked over by another competitor.
Oh, no.
Finished 4th and eliminated from the event.
No.
Because this event, it's like, it's people going really fast on these little skates. Obviously, ice is pretty slippery. Yeah. They're all wearing Lycra. You know, everyone's hot and bothered. You get a little nudge, it's all over. Apart from this, his career also had some massive injury setbacks, like some full-on stuff happened. I mean, in a 1994 World Cup event in Montreal, he was involved in a collision and another skater's blade.
Nope,
Where, through his thigh.
Oh.
And it cut through so deep, and his blood was pumping so fast at the time that he lost 4 liters of blood.
Oh my God.
How did he survive that?
Apparently he thought, in his head, he's going, if you go under, if you lose consciousness, you will not wake up again. So he's just like, gotta maintain
consciousness.
All four of his quad muscles had been sliced through, and he needed over 100 stitches.
Gross.
Jesus.
Took a year and a half before his leg was back to full strength.
And he still wanted to skate after that.
Yeah, but he just, like, listening to him talk, he's just one of those fully motivated... I mean, anyone who competes at the highest level
must be a bit like that,
or just have so much natural talent. Yeah. You're either, like, just got heaps and heaps of natural talent, or you've just... And even then, you probably have to work pretty hard anyway.
Yeah,
of course.
Oh my! So wow, he nearly died.
So yeah, that was one. Like there were multiple incidents, but that was one of the most full on ones. He had another one that was pretty full on. Less than 2 years out from his famous 2002 Olympic Games, he broke his neck in a training accident. Another skater fell in front of him, and Bradbury tried to jump over him, Landy style.
So he was inspired by Landy. Yeah,
he was.
Hooray!
Yeah, we did it. We did it, everyone. We did it.
But instead, he clipped him, very much like Landy,
he didn't chop him or anything,
but it meant that Bradbury fell headfirst into the barriers.
Oh my God.
And broke his neck, fracturing his C4 and C5 vertebra.
Oh my God.
Wow.
He spent 6 weeks in a halo brace. Have you heard of them? They're that full on, it looks like you got scaffolding around your head.
So you can't move your neck at all.
Yeah, exactly.
6 weeks.
6 weeks. He needed 4 pins in his skull and screws and plates in his back and chest.
Nope.
What?
And he's more machine than man.
And this is after he nearly bled to death.
Yeah. He's...
And he still skated?
Yeah, he's been through 3 Olympics by this stage. He's getting pretty old for a skater. Like, he's probably missed his chances.
All right, and this is probably his last shot. Last shot at being at the Olympics.
He went, and I listened to an interview just before, and he was talking about that time, and he was like, it was a tough time. He went and saw his doctor, and when he went and saw his doctor...
The doctor just shaking his head.
The doctor said...
Oh, no, no.
Yeah, basically, you should never skate again. Just give it away. You've had a great run sort of thing, but this is too dangerous now. And what Bradbury said in this interview, goes, so I went and saw another doctor. and yeah, eventually found the right doctor, and he sort of gave him the right answer.
The right doctor said, yeah, you'll be right. Thank you. That's all I needed.
So this
just,
is...
Just, if you're that confident, you're going to just do it.
So less than a couple of years before the Olympics, he couldn't move, basically. So he couldn't train. It took him ages to get back to... I couldn't believe, like, I didn't know any of this stuff.
People never talk about this.
But he did it. He got back and he qualified for the 2002 Salt Lake City Olympics. Obviously he'd already been, this was his fourth Olympic Games. And he was the oldest entrant in the competition.
Wow.
And given pretty much no chance of winning.
About how old is he at this stage?
So in 2002, so he'd be 29.
And he's already the oldest.
Yeah.
In that competition.
Yeah, but I don't know, that just surprises me.
Yeah, that does seem interesting. But I mean, some sports, you know, like gymnastics, if you're 18, you're the oldest in the competition.
Yeah.
Just depends. This must be one. It was interesting. He was also talking a lot about how your weight's distributed. Like speed skaters, basically just huge, muscly legs and just trying to be pretty slim up top. It's kind of a funny...
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's all the power's in the legs. You're basically, up top is just keeping your balance, but the legs is getting all the power.
That makes sense.
I'd hardly ever watched any. I watched a few races earlier on YouTube. It's a pretty cool looking sport, the way they move.
Oh, yeah, it's cool.
And they just, like, overtaking each other and just sliding into position. It's very elegant.
And how far are they going? Like, is it lots?
It depends. There's lots of different distances, 5,000, 1,000.
It's reminding me of
multiple thousands.
Another event I like watching at the Olympics, which is the cycling.
Yeah, it's got a little bit about that, just round and around the velodrome.
And the tactics of like the team cycling when there's one in, one out, someone goes up high.
I love when they go up high and just drift around to the back. They just watch each other and then they go, whoosh, and they go down and like around.
Yeah, there's something, it's like they're like a lion and its prey. Like go. And we're going for it. Go.
Yeah, that actually, yeah, cycling can be really fun. And that one in particular, and they've got funny names, those cycling events. I can't think of any. But there's that one with the bell event and then. But yeah, there's that tactical one where someone has to start out in front, and then they're normally just watching over their shoulder, and it's just like one of them will go
barely,
and
moving.
As soon as one of them goes, you basically almost stop. Really interesting. It's
really
just all tactics, and then speed.
Mm.
It's quite a bizarre sport, that one, I reckon. Anyhow, so he was given very little chance of winning Bradbury, obviously, you know, he was basically past it.
Mm-hmm.
And missed his chances. He was at the top of his game and had a bit of bad luck. Also had some horrible injuries.
Fell over when he was the favourite.
Well, didn't
got
fall
really
over,
hurt.
Was knocked over by someone else. Yeah. So they're the kind of annoying. It's like, oh, I mean, that wasn't even my fault, really. But, oh, well. But apparently his attitude was always positive. It just wasn't like...
That's the thing about the Olympics is you miss out. And it's like, well,
four years. Yeah. So he's made it to Salt Lake City. He won his heat convincingly in the 1,000 meters, which obviously is a good thing. Then gets him in through to the quarterfinals, but unfortunately he drew very poorly because basically it's a bit of luck as to which quarterfinal you get into, and some people have described the group he was in as the group of death.
Group of death. Oh no!
The top two go through. In the quarterfinal, and he in his group, he also had Apollo Anton Ono,
who was
the favorite for the whole event, and also Mark Gainon, who was the defending world champion. So a couple of guns,
Ono and Gainon.
So he had to beat at least one of them to go through.
Do Gainon.
You were thinking about that.
The name came out, I'm like,
could
that
see
is
the cogs
so
turn.
Funny. How am I going to bring that in? I'm just going to say it. Do again on.
I'm just going to sledgehammer it in.
Yeah, I think this is my only opportunity. I've got to go for it. I've got to put the speed skates on.
This is your Olympic Games. Yeah.
And I got there, guys.
I'm so proud of you.
I got the gold medal for the silliest joke. Do again on.
So, obviously, very tough group, but he had to finish in the top two, and he didn't. He finished third
and was
eliminated from the Olympics again.
What? What?
Meaning that, he didn't advance to the semi-final.
He did not collect go. I mean, Pascoe, he did not collect $200.
How do I pronounce this before?
Ganon.
Ganon.
No, you said Gainon, but I want to say Duganon.
Ganon. Yeah, Ganon, it's G-A-G-N-O-N. Gagnon.
Let's call him Gagnon.
All right. So Gagnon was disqualified.
Oh.
Cheating.
For
drugs.
Obstructing another racer.
Obstructing. I got it.
Got it in one.
Which meant that Bradbury got called up and made it into the semifinal.
What's this obstructing thing, like getting in the way?
No, he
illegally.
He stopped halfway through and put his hand down and went, ah. No.
I win.
Stop it.
Obstruction, goal attack.
Yeah.
That's a netball thing.
Yeah.
Someone comes out with a red card.
So,
yucky.
So Bradbury's through.
He made it through to the semi-final.
Woo!
So he and I heard him talking about this as well in another interview. Is like, they asked him what the best moment of his life was, and he said, obviously, the birth of my child was pretty great, but the best moment of my life...
he was saying his own birth. I remember that. Fuck, it was good.
Fuck, it was
so good.
I was just out like a rocket.
So he...
I knew I was going to be fast.
A little gooey.
He said,
loved it, flopping around in the goo.
Do goo on.
Do goo on. That's what I said to the doctor, as he slapped my ass. I'm in back. Fuck. Oh dear.
Yeah,
it's
an interesting baby.
Favorite moment, his own baby's birth, but also.
But also, on this day, there was about half an hour between heats finals, and, you know, they just go out one after the other, sort of thing. And he was saying how in the room, you get about half an hour big chunk of that time you're sharpening your skates, you got to get on the bike, get your lactic acid mm-hmm. out and that sort of stuff. You only really have about 5 minutes to sit and think. And he was like, in this break, he did all those things and he sat there and he's like, hang on, I've done it. I've made the Olympics. I broke my neck less than 2 years ago. I've done it. I've reached my, like, and that he reckons that was the best moment of
really,
his life.
So this is enough.
Sitting in the rooms or whatever, having that realization, he's just like, it was the best feeling he's ever felt.
That's
just
great.
He felt like he did achieved it because you know, it really when the doctor's saying never skate again, being in the semifinals of the Olympics is like amazing, right?
He brings up the doctor and just goes, suck shit. Do you think about that? Beep, beep.
Who is this?
Who is this? It's fucking Stephen Bradbury.
He has to call back because he's already
He has to call back. Sorry about that. Stephen Bradbury, by the way.
Now, suck shit.
Suck shit.
Bradbury.
It's his war cry.
I keep talking over your riffs.
Yeah,
sorry,
you
guys.
Do.
Yeah, I'm very good at reading reading what you guys are up to. And, sorry. Yep, I've done it again. No, that's pretty funny. He's a baby in this act out. I'm enjoying it.
Good one, good one.
Very nice.
Your commentary is the best.
Team effort.
So, leading up to the semi-final, he talks to his coach and he decides to change his strategy.
Oh boy.
At this stage, he sort of has realised that his speed is not quite up to the other competitors.
The event's called speed skating. I'm not going to even skate. I'm not going to skate. I'm not going to go fast.
I'm going to do the worm.
I'm going to worm 1,000-meter worm.
I'm going to put my flip-flops on and I'm just going to change this up a little bit.
I'm going to try and come last and then I'll tell everyone that that's the new event.
I'm going to put salt on the ice.
I'll melt those fuckers. And I'm going to swim. I'll swim my way to victory.
I'm going to melt the ice.
Melt the ice and I'll swim. That'll show them.
I mean, I was going to say not far off, but yeah, you were quite a while off. But it was a pretty dramatic change. So he spoke to his coach and decided as his speed wasn't quite up there with them, he was going to sit in behind the rest of the field and just like follow them around, you know, getting their slipstream sort of thing and pretty much just play for a crash. Crashes, collisions happen. So he decided that he was going to...
No.
Yeah, he was going to sit at the back. Yeah, I know. It's kind of a bit defeatist, but it worked. In the semi-final, he was coming last. He was following him around. Three of the other competitors out of five crashed, fell over. He finished and made it through to the final.
Oh my God.
That was the semi-final.
In the semi-final, yeah.
What?
So he, but what a great, just an, I just.
So he took, is it the top fact, two go I, through again?
Top two.
Top two go through and he made it through. So he gets through to the final. And I'm like, it almost feels too good to be true. Like, you've said that afterwards. Like, you know, this was my strategy. It wasn't just that you were the slowest
on the field.
But I mean, you watch it. He's still going fast. Like, they're all going fast.
Yeah, he's keeping up, of course.
He was pretty much keeping up and it just sort of just falling behind him. So it's like, I guess I believe that,
wow.
Right? So he's made the final. He's made the Olympic final when he was just stoked to have made it. He was stoked to be in the semi.
That doctor is getting a lot of calls. Guess what, doc? Suck shit! Final.
Wow.
And then in the final... Bradbury again found himself out the back, as was his strategy. I guess it worked for him in the semi, so why not give it another go?
Is everyone doing that strategy? So everyone's trying to be the back.
Yeah, everyone's fighting for it. They're turning around, going the wrong way.
one of them's just standing at the finish line, at the start line. Everyone falls over. Now's my time. Then they do 1,000 meters.
Yeah, exactly.
While the others are being taken up in ambulances,
they're just like cutting each other with this.
Yes,
still go, but then they fall over anyway.
It's just 1,000 meter victory lap. But then at the final turn, they slip.
That's a lot of laps.
And then a kid runs on, like a 4-year-old child. He's won the 1,000 meter gold medal. Who is this kid? Who's this kid?
The medal's too big for him.
And so yes, it's the final, right? Very exciting. Salt Lake City. It's a beautiful place, I guess. In I've been there. I think I drove through there. It's in
Utah.
What's Utah? Give me two.
Two. Utah. Meatball.
What's that from again?
Point Break.
Point Break. Yeah, that's right. Utah. It's Keanu Reeves.
I know
and
Point Break, but I don't know the line.
Utah.
Keanu Reeves is known as Utah because he's from Utah, and that's how people get nicknames. And the other guy, not Nick Nolte, but
Who else is the other guy?
It's the guy, you used to have a game called Nick Nolte or
Gary Busey.
Gary Busey.
And they don't look at all the same. We used to have a show where we made up world records, and one of them was the world's best people at telling the difference between Nick Nolte and Gary Busey. We just showed you 10 photos, and you yell out if you think it's Nick Nolte or Gary Busey. They don't even look that similar.
Like, if you're describing them, it's similar. Yeah, you know, they're like kind of a big, muscly, sort of old guy with like sandy, wavy hair. But if you see photos, you're like, no. Clearly different people.
And then one of them was neither Nolte nor Busey. It was a photo of this woman who'd had like a mugshot taken for like drunk driving or something, and she looked a lot like Gary Busey.
I think I know that mugshot.
Poor woman. She looks like Gary Busey. Oh, so.
Anyway, what are we talking about?
We're talking about.
Oh, yeah. So the final, Bradbury.
Salt Lake City, Utah.
So, yes, good. So it was the final, and he's using this. He's decided to go with the same strategy again. I just watched the race, so I can sort of describe it. The five of them. Four
so
out
five
the front,
finalists.
Five finalists. Bradbury pretty much immediately drops out of the rear.
We're assured.
The other four competitors. Flying right, and they're getting a bit physical, but and they're rotating who's in the lead. Like it looks like it's anyone's race, pretty much of the top four. They're sort of everyone's got a spot out in front, and they go round and round. The whole lap after lap, it's the four up the front, Bradbury with a little bit of a gap in between. Then on the final turn, one of them goes for a maneuver, knocks out the legs of one of the other guys. He hits the deck. Then all four in front fall and slide out to the side. Bradbury, with a good beat or two, swoops through, puts the hands in the air, first ever Australian Winter Olympic gold medalist.
I still find it unbelievable.
It's amazing. Well, yeah, but you're right. It's that sweet beat where he didn't even have to avoid anyone.
If he was trying to compete with him,
he would have been.
He probably would have been swept out too. Second place. I wonder how. Yeah,
because don't they get up and like
the guy?
Scramble
yeah, they just
it?
Scramble like pretty much dive across the line. Two
yeah,
guys. One guy
too,
comes through feet first for second, and then the other guy sort of slides over.
Feet first for second.
Yeah.
Isn't that great? Yeah. See, that's because I remember that race, and it's one of the most iconic Australian sporting stories. But I did not know that it happened in the semi as
so
well.
That two in a row.
I didn't know that either. Yeah, I knew. The final is all I knew. I didn't know that he was the favourite years earlier.
I didn't know that he'd been knocked out and then just, like got in because somebody got disqualified and then
yeah, it's so like so much in. Of it is drama. Amazing.
It's luck. And that's not discounting all of his work though. That's
but
so
I mean
unfair, but
it is a lot more in perspective for me now knowing that he'd been to three other Olympics.
Yes.
Yeah.
That he'd been the favorite, that he'd overcome these two like life-threatening injuries.
Awful injuries.
Because in my head, I think a lot of Australians who know the story just think of him as that lucky guy that was okay at ice skating and that happened to make his way to the final somehow and then just scooted through and stole victory.
He's seen as being
a bit of a
pure luck and just like he was unheard of the day before. Even though he'd won medals previously.
It's just that, winter sports
and
just aren't
really,
massive because we don't have the snow
But that day, he won it that day and he became, you know, a household name.
Yeah, you're
in
right.
Australia
he is a household name.
And in an interview after winning his gold, sort of reflecting on some of his injuries and that sort of stuff, he said, the quote of his, he said, "Obviously, I wasn't the fastest skater. I don't think I'll take the medal as the minute and a half of the race I actually won. I'll take it as the last decade of hard slog I put in."
Which is a great way to look
that
at it.
That is a great.
Because I also remember seeing an interview, and I don't really remember exactly what he was saying, but it was sort of that thing of like he struggled a bit with it for a while in terms of you know, like you won by default. You only won because everybody else fell over. Like, it doesn't feel like a win. But yeah, taking it for the 10 years or the, you know, the lifetime that he spent.
And like all the bad luck he had when he was the fastest, but he got knocked over. Like, you know, those like guys.
Yeah, I suppose the other guys have to think about that too, don't they?
Yeah.
Because one of them was the favourite that fell over.
Yeah, totally.
That's amazing.
So yeah, I love his attitude about it. Mm. I think he, and possibly because of that, his great attitude and the fact that it's sort of, and it actually in Australia became we're talking to a lot of Australians on the podcast, but it,
obviously, there are people of Sweden from all over the world. Yeah.
But it became a saying, doing a Bradbury was when you sort of fell through. Competitors fell over or, you know, something just went your way and a lot of luck happened at the last minute and you just come through default. And he said, talking in an interview, he was saying how he loves it. He loves how he's become a saying. He feels really proud of it. And he thinks, he hopes people are still saying it after he dies, and he thinks it's really nice to be remembered that way.
Was he on Dancing with the Stars?
Probably.
Because that's the real victory.
Yeah.
By default, everyone else fell over.
I feel like he was on Dancing with the Stars.
He just did his classic worm.
Yeah, I'm going to worm on
I'm going to worm the way all the... And his partner's like, what are you doing? He's just worming on top of her.
Ew.
Yeah, that sounded way worse than I thought it would.
Don't worm on top of anybody.
He's done over 800 speaking events.
I was going to say,
he was asked.
He must make a packet doing that.
Not long after, he was asked by Retrovision to speak at their Retrovision's like a TV chain of stores,
like electronics and stuff. Yeah,
and he was asked by them to speak at their some sort of a conference they were having. And he got the call and they said, yeah, we want to offer you $5,000 to do a 45-minute speech. And he's like, that's what I earned in the last year sort of thing. Like, speed skating didn't pay a lot of money. So doing this one talk, and because of that, he
got the speech ready.
He got the speech ready. He did about 3 weeks of work on it. He said he read it all word for word. It was all printed out. Big letters.
Hello, things saying, I am Stephen Bradbury.
Say this bit fast, this bit slower.
Wow.
He hired a speechwriter, which he's worked with a lot over the years, and a comedian as well to throw in some humor.
Great.
And really, you know, just, it's pretty, like he goes, oh, I'm going to do this seriously. But I guess that's probably how athletes work is they go, well, if I'm going to talk, I'm going to bloody put it all in.
Which is great.
But he goes, this is like... He sounds like he's got a few elements of a little bit wankiness in it. Because, he works as a motivational speaker. But he says that he doesn't like the term motivational speaker.
Nobody
feels
does.
That's a little bit un-Australian, a little bit too Americanized. So he likes to call himself...
Oh, no.
Oh, here we go.
Oh, no.
A real life speaker.
Get fucked.
Stephen, I was really impressed in the last half hour of this, but no.
It just felt like real life.
And then...
I'm not motivated. I just feel like I've got to go back to my normal...
On his website, he's got some testimonials.
No, he doesn't.
Yeah. And I mean, a lot of... You know, it's all fine, but this one
let's remember he had those frosted tips, so we already knew he was a bit of a wanker.
It was 2002.
He said he did other things. Like, he just to be motivated, he, growing up, when he decided he wanted to do it, he sticky taped to his ceiling a thing saying... something like it's the Olympics. Get up, and he said every morning he opened his eyes, he saw that, and was like, everyone else who wants to go to the Olympics is up right now. If you don't get up, they're up and they're out training you right now. So just like always on.
No, that's the thing with
from you when you open your eyes up
with elite athletes, they are like that. Though my mum works with a woman who. Played in the Olympics. She was softball for Canada, and she one time just recited this big passage of Bryce Courtney's "The Power of One," that like was her. It was her. It's the Olympics. Get up, you know. It was her thing that like pushed her, and I was just like, ah, cool, man.
Yeah, I wish I had that.
I don't have that. That's why we're comedians.
Yeah.
Like, okay, if you don't get up, there's plenty of other comedians that will, so...
But plenty of others that won't, but will probably naturally funnier than you are anyway.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no.
But I like some of the testimonials he's got on his site. I think it looks like he just sort of cuts and pastes the whole thing. Because one of them it's got at the end. It's like, says all this nice stuff.
and then has their email, aj7@hotmail.com.
And it'll say stuff like, so, you know, he's a really great speaker, all that sort of stuff.
Update your virus software.
Sent from my iPhone.
Got that. Yep. And read it and weep. Read it and weep. He calls the doctor up. Yeah, just got an email from the antivirus people, huh? Told me you'd never skate again, didn't you?
Who is this? Stop calling me.
Reveal yourself.
Sorry, Matt. Testimonials.
So this one, like, there's, you know, a couple of lines that says some nice stuff, and then at the end of the testimonial, it says, so make sure you add his comments to your testimonials.
That's part of the testimonial.
That's part of the testimonial. So I reckon you could probably have...
Could have got rid of that bit.
Come on.
But yeah. My favourite one, probably, of the ones I read, I don't even... It's not that good. It's just like... it feels like... It's what Jess would describe as cute, this whole website, I reckon. But anyway... Goes, I worked with Stephen Bradbury last week, full stop. He really impressed me, full stop. Funny, comma, clean, entertaining and motivating.
I checked behind his ears. Clean.
Phil Cass, comedy magician.
No. Why would I describe his website as cute?
It's just everything about it, like leaving in, add this to your testimonials.
That's so good.
Don't you reckon that's great? Isn't that, am I misusing your use of cute?
Yeah, but it's great.
Damn it. Stephen Bradbury.
Come on, Bradbury.
All right.
That's awesome.
Anyway, yeah, Stephen Bradbury. Good guy.
There we go.
Three very different athletes, all who worked very hard. My guy, Zatopek, who decided at the last minute to run the race and then won it.
Did a Zatopek.
Then we had John Landy, did a Landy when he helped out his mate and still won the race. And then we had Bradbury, who tried so hard for so many years and then had a bit of luck, cruised across the line and will be remembered in Australian sports history forever.
Yeah. First ever. Actually, it was the first ever Winter Olympic gold medalist from any Southern Hemisphere country, apparently.
Far out. That's pretty cool, actually.
Yeah, but I guess it's like the whole Southern Hemisphere isn't really into Winter Olympics, I guess. We don't have the climate for it, right?
We're too gnarly.
Unless you're from Antarctica, but that's not really a country, is it?
We don't really have, we don't have enough snow and, that here.
Yeah.
That's why a lot of our, gymnasts go into skiing and the aerial skiing and...
Right. And, we do tend, Australia does tend to go well at aerial skiing, that sort of stuff. But it's because apparently we don't even have a mountain in Australia that's high enough to be able to host the Winter Olympics.
No, we'll never have
that. Like, by nowhere near it.
Yeah, we've got nothing.
We only get snow because I think of where we're positioned compared to Antarctica or something. There's some weird thing. We shouldn't even get snow at all, but our snow is pretty shitty.
And it's not, it's ice and it's not even like, there's only a few parts of Australia that get snow.
Oh.
Yeah, so we won't host the Winter Olympics, but we're pretty sick for the summer, so come on down.
Again.
I think it's nearly time for Melbourne to have another go. Like, 56 was ages ago.
It's a while ago.
Let us have another go. I want to do it. I want the Olympics.
You'd be a volunteer, wouldn't you?
Yes. Do you reckon they'd need a stand-up comedian for the opening ceremony? There's often a space for a tight five set.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, you could be the new Nikki Webster. She did a top five, didn't she?
And then,
I was at the shops the other day.
Her material.
I want $5 worth of mixed lollies because I'm a little girl. And,
and that's what girls do.
And it's 2000. It's the year 2000.
Yeah, all right. Thank you. And good night.
Yeah, she was good, wasn't she? She was really good.
Great
Very
value.
Funny.
Great value.
And I would volunteer the fuck out of that Olympics.
Oh, you would.
Oh my God, I would do anything. I would be like ushering people to their seats, tearing tickets, no problem. Handing sweaty athletes towels. There you go, Mr. Athlete. Have a towel. You look all sweaty.
Handing them sweaty towels. There you go, mate.
Handing sweaty athletes towels.
No, that makes, that
if you
make
listen
more
back,
sense.
I think you said handing sweaty towels, athletes. Here you are, sir.
No.
You look very sweaty. Can I help you get even sweatier, please?
That's a very good impression of me.
That raises a good point, Dave. Normally, the person who does the report does the editing.
I literally...
Chuck it up! Manny! You thought you could do a Bradbury and sneaking at the end there, but I did an Emil Zatopek and I jumped in.
Landy and I was just a nice person.
Yeah. Well, if you were, you'd offer to edit it.
Oh, thanks, Well, Jess Landy, thank you so much.
No.
Well, I think we're going to have a discussion off mic about this, but I would like to dedicate this episode to Andrew, who suggested the topic of a meal, and then we turned it into a meal of sorts.
Up, Dave.
No.
That was great.
It wasn't.
I'm really sorry, Emil.
And I hope that
very disrespectful.
Hope we got everyone else excited for the Olympics starting in a couple of days.
Woo! Olympics!
The Winter Olympics starting in 2 years and 2 days, I guess.
Woo! Olympics! I'm up for it anytime, baby. I want the Olympics to be every year. No, then it wouldn't be as special.
It wouldn't be as special. Would not.
Let's make it every 10. No. Once a century. You may never see one.
Only like every fifth generation gets to actually compete.
Aww.
Now that's special.
Anyway,
let's get the fuck out of here.
Let's get out of here. But before we get out of here, we got to tell you, email us in some topic ideas. Andrew got on. How about you? What are you waiting for? Get on the email, dogoonpod@gmail.com, or get on Twitter, @dogoonpod, or Facebook us, or comment or message us. Do Go On Pod is the page you search for on Twitter. Get in contact. Do your thing.
5-star review.
Be an Olympic legend and give us a 5-star review.
Dare to dream. Just dare to dream.
How needy do you have to be to do a podcast? Hey, can you please give us a 5-star review? Contact us. And
now, speaking of reviews and sport, I've been. What happens is, I don't know if you guys know, when you go on your iTunes, it just goes to whatever country you're in. So when we go on ours, we can mainly just see the Australian reviews. But I found a way that we can check.
Oh, I didn't know that.
We can check it. Yeah, so we've got reviews from around the world. New Zealand, Canada, the UK,
that's
America.
Cool.
There's a bunch of reviews. And the way, what happens is I found a way, someone's put it online, that you can just change the code so it says .us or whatever. And you can see the three most recent reviews from that country. And in Canada, I would just like to say, if you are listening and you did this review, hats off to you, because it was very funny. They wrote, if this podcast was a person, he or she would be super funny and smart, but wouldn't be able to throw a ball. Which I totally agree with, so thank you so much. And that was a 5-star review.
Wait,
so
you agree that it's funny and smart?
Yes, I do. And I also can't fucking throw a ball. So if you want to...
Unless it's like a fancy dress ball, and then he's all about the decorations.
And throwing it down the stairs. But if you want to give us a sweet review, that would be absolutely amazing, whatever country you're in, and chuck it on iTunes. And if they're funny, they make us laugh as well. But until next week, we're going to leave it there, and I will say to you, enjoy the Olympics. A couple of weeks of good times coming your way, and the Paralympics coming up in September. Enjoy that, but until next week, I say a goodbye.
Aloha, haters.
Dare to dream.
Dare to dream.
Bye.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful, Jess.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.